Scott Merkin joins us on the IHOP hotline. He covers the Chicago White Sox for MLB.com. I mentioned we've had Scott on the show to preview the White Sox. Well, this is the first time we've had you on to talk about what has been a historically difficult season. How you holding up, Scott? What's it like covering this team?
Oh, you know, I'm doing fine. I mean, I was off for this Baltimore series, so I missed the big win yesterday. But, you know, it's you got to find the stories in the season. I mean, you know, you hate to sound glib, but we don't get paid by the victory. So, you know, you get paid a salary one way or the other, and you try and do the best job you can. And there's some good stories to be had. They've had some, you know, really good production minor league side this year. Maybe not across the board, but some really good individual performances. Garrett Crochet has been, I think, one of the better stories in baseball, even though he's understandably on an innings limit in the second half because he's not only crushed his single-season innings limit, he's almost doubled his career innings total so far. But, you know, there's been some good stories. You know, Grady Sizemore has added some energy to the team. So, yeah, but it's tough when they lose, you know, 21 in a row, 14 in a row, 12 in a row is the last one, I think. So it's tough to kind of find angles off the game, but you know you do what you can. They have it, put it this way, they have it tougher than I do, that's for sure.
So yeah, I was going to ask you about Grady Sizemore because, you know, I'm a Cleveland fan. He spent probably his best years as a player in Cleveland. Now he's a young manager, probably by all indications not going to get that full-time job. What have you observed about his demeanor as a guy leading the clubhouse and the dugout?
You know, I talked to him one-on-one Sunday, and he kind of said, you know, he hopes that he does a good enough job that he at least makes it a tough decision for the people who are going to make the call. And, you know, ultimately it's Chris Getz and Jerry Reinsdorf, but there will be others involved as well. Yeah, I think it's just he commands a lot of respect because, you know, he's a guy who did it at that level and did it well, did it at a high level for at least 3 years. You know, I think he played three straight years of 162 games. I covered him. I mean, I didn't cover him directly, but I covered the Sox when he was tearing it up for Cleveland in 05, 06, and 07. And I just think and it helped that he was there all year. You know, he was their major league coach, which is just kind of like a guy who helped out wherever they needed it. He worked with the outfielders defensively and just a little bit offensively and base running. So he was there all season and commands a lot of respect. And I think, you know, his record is not any better than what Pedro Grifol's record was just in a shorter time period. But I do believe that he's added a little extra life. And he even talked about that he could sense the morale was down. And I think what you were seeing, you know, when they were really fading is, you know, a team that kind of played hard every day. And it's a really good clubhouse. There's no infighting. It's just a really good group fighting for each other. But you could sense like it was almost like, okay, when is this going to turn? When are we going to lose? And I don't think that's been there with Grady. Again, they haven't won a lot of games at Grady. But I do think the belief is there that they can do it. So maybe that's half the battle, but you kind of need, you know, to enhance the team a little bit to win the other half of the battle.
Scott Merkin with us from MLB.com. He covers the Chicago White Sox for MLB.com. So they pretty much unloaded at the trade deadline. You look at this roster, you're aware of their minor league system. You have gotten to know Chris Getz. What do you think the off-season plan is? And then the second part of that question, I'm a Cardinals fan, and Cardinals fans are spoiled rotten, and I admit that. So we're up in arms about everything that involves the front office and ownership. I can't imagine what a White Sox fan would think right now about Jerry Reinsdorf. Where is all that?
Oh, I don't think it's just Jerry. I think it's the entire organization. And, you know, they have a right to be angry, and I think the White Sox front office and the White Sox as an organization understand that. You have to understand that when Rick Hahn embarked on the last rebuild, this is like rebuild three since I've been covering the team, but embarked on the one that started with the Chris Sale trade to Boston at the winter meetings just outside D.C. in 2016, fans not only embraced that, they like thrived off it. You know, I mean, I've told this story 100 times now, but when Moncada made his debut, he had like an 8-pitch at bat. I forgot how it even ended, but he fouled a pitch off on like pitch 6 and got a standing ovation. So that's how people went nuts when they announced on their the Sox Twitter account that Michael Kopech was making his starting debut that following Tuesday. They announced it on a Sunday. So to embrace it like that, to love it like that, and then get 2 playoff wins out of the whole thing. And I'm not talking 2 playoff series wins. I'm talking they won 1 game in Oakland in 20 and one game at home against Houston in 21, and that's it. And then to, you know, be on pace at least, let's not say probably, because you never know, they could finish drawing the 0-3 Tigers, won five of their last six games to avoid 120, right? So you never know what can happen. But even if the season ended today, 109 losses, I mean, back-to-back 100 loss seasons, in the scope of baseball and only baseball, it is embarrassing, and they have a right to be angered. There's no question about it. And I understand what the fans are feeling. In terms of this offseason, I still think it's going to be another rebuild year, another kind of year to figure out what they have in their system. Some more guys will come up. They have the number one and number two left-handed pitching prospects in baseball, and Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith, who was the number five pick overall in this year's draft, in the 2024 draft. So you'll see guys, you know, you'll see a younger team, more guys come to the majors, but eventually they're going to have to spend, and I don't think, I don't mean they have to go out and spend $400. That'd be something, wouldn't it? $400 million. I could spend $400 on a player, you know, to make this team great. But they're going to have to spend a considerable amount, maybe across four or five players, to really enhance the roster. And they did that the first time, and it just didn't, for whatever reason, it just didn't work. Underperformance, injuries, you know, signings that didn't pan out like they wanted. But, you know, at some point that's going to have to happen, and maybe that'll be the offseason going into 26. But I think 25 is not going to be a lot of additions and more, you know, youth and development.
If you could point to maybe one thing as kind of the tipping point to where the White Sox go from a playoff caliber team in 21 and 2 and 3 years later, especially 3 years later, they're historically bad. What would that be? Is it Tim Anderson falling off a cliff? Is it injuries? Did it start with La Russa's hiring? Where do you think it started to go wrong for the White Sox?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. And I will say that if you're going to complain about Tony coming back, you know, after being out of the dugout for, 10 years, they did win 93 games and won the division in 21 with him at the helm. Now, again, it's not a sole operation, or I should say a solo operation, but they also had a ton of injuries that year, too. So it wasn't like he was handed a perfect team and just step back and watch it work. There was, you know, Aloy was out, Robert was out, Nick Madrigal, who was still a key player at that point, he went out all for extended periods of time. And they somehow, you know, now the rest of the division wasn't very good that year. A lot of injuries in the Cleveland pitching staff that year. Kansas City and Detroit just weren't good teams. And I think Minnesota had an off year, too. And then they finished 81 and 81, his second year, and he was very sick, unfortunately, which thank God he's healthy now and still part of the organization. But I just think everything you said, what I was just saying, you know, injuries to key guys, trades that didn't work, you know, free agency that didn't pan out, that kind of thing. So, and, more so injuries. You know, I mean, Eloy Jimenez has had a quote before the season started about how he wanted to see himself, Robert, and Moncada all play at least 150 games this year. And I'm not sure, Eloy's not with the Orioles, but I'm not sure if together they're going to total just above that. Although Robert played, you know, has played a little bit coming back. But Moncada hasn't been there since April 9th, and Eloy's with the Orioles now. So just a combination of everything just did not work for them and leaves them where they're at.
Final moments here with Scott Merkin, MLB.com, Chicago White Sox beat writer. White Sox sitting at 32 and 109, although last night they handled the Orioles in Baltimore. So there
32
are
and Scott, 32 and 109 sounds really bad, doesn't it? When you say it out loud.
It does. I tried to gloss that over quickly.
And the interesting thing is they have two huge wins under Grady against the Yankees and the Orioles. So go figure baseball, right? I mean, two of their bigger wins are against probably, you know, well, I don't want to say two best teams because it's so hard to pick the best team in the American League right now, but two playoff teams almost certainly, and they handled that. And they're 5-5 against the Guardians, who have a 4.5 game lead, I believe, on the Royals to win the division, right? Yeah, that one's really hard. Now, they played three early without Stephen Kwan, so that could make a little bit of a difference. But still, 5-5, they're 5-5 against the Guardians, 1-12 against the Royals, 1-12 against the Twins, and 1-9 against the Tigers. So figure that one out.
Wow.
Amazing. So there are two players still on this roster who anybody would love to have. One of them, Garrett Crochet, you talked about him earlier. He has had a tremendous season. He's performed at a very high level. The other, Luis Robert, who has not mm-hmm. had a good season. He's missed a big chunk of it. And when he's been on the field, he hasn't been productive. Where do those two guys sit with the White Sox moving forward?
Crochet, I would, you know, it's tough because, I mean, when you have a guy like that who clearly sits at the top of your rotation, and I would argue in the first half of the season was probably as good as any starter in the game, as dominant as any starter in the game. And remember, this was a guy who told me when he was told he was the opening day starter, that was the first time he really knew he was going to break camp as part of the rotation, because there was speculation with him coming from the bullpen in only one full season that he would go to their AAA team in Charlotte to kind of start his, you know, speed up his workload there. And here you go. He's now one of the more dominant guys. But the thing is, they have him for two more years of control. So if you can't see yourself winning in those 2 years, it probably makes better sense to try and move him and get a huge return at this point, especially as great as he's pitched this year. And now you'll have in the offseason no innings constraint. He'll have the whole season behind him. He'll be ready to go next year and be ready to go, you know, full boat as a starter. Robert's an interesting case because he had a tremendous season in 2023, one of the more complete seasons I've seen from a White Sox player. And then he was hurt again this year, hurt himself in Kansas City, running out a double. And then, you know, he's been very uneven since he's come back. He's chased a lot more than he usually has. He's still running the bases well. I think he's got over 20 stolen bases. He's going to end up with like 15 to 18 home runs. But I wonder if teams, you know, he has 1 year left next year, and then he has two option years. So I wonder if teams may want to see him a little bit in the season before trading for him. Or I guess you could go, as Chris said, Chris Getz said from when he took over, there is no one who's untradeable on this team. So anything is possible, except I would say guys like Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. You know, they're here for the long haul. Probably Colson Montgomery, their top position player, is there. But anyone on that major league roster, anyone on that 40-man pretty much is fair game to be traded. So it'll be interesting to see the kind of interest he'll have in the offseason from other teams. There was considerable interest in Garrett right up till the last hour or so of the deadline this year from teams like the Dodgers and the Phillies, and they made good offers. So we'll see if those offers even jump up next year. And there'll be more teams in it, I think, too. Teams like the Cubs and the Rays, who were kind of, and still are, kind of borderline playoff contenders, may think, well, this is the guy who takes us from borderline to back over the top in 25.
Scott, thank you. I'm thankful that a veteran reporter such as yourself is covering this team. It'd be a really tough one for a newbie to step in and try to cover a team like this. We appreciate your time. Thanks again.
Sure, anytime. Take care.